Larry Moss, thank you so much for being here. It's so good. I haven't seen you in a few years. Pre-COVID was the last time that I saw you in class.
Say pre-COVID four times.
Pre-COVID.
Very good. you see,
still telling me to articulate.
That's right. Articulation, you see. But, this is a good way to begin, but continue.
Yes. Thank you so much, Larry, for being here. I really, really
it's
appreciate it. I've been wanting to get you on for quite a while, so thank you for coming. You and I know each other a little bit.
Sure.
I have been training with you for quite a while, actually, on and off. I think the first time we worked together was in 2015 or 14
wow.
or something like that.
Yeah.
So quite a while ago. It was in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It was the first time I subsequently moved to New York and also worked with you out here a little bit. I would like to start just a little bit at the very beginning, maybe a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and how you got started. I know you were an actor first, so maybe just a little bit about where you grew up and then how you got into acting and all that sort of stuff.
After you turn 80, it all begins to be very, very strange. What?
As much as you can remember.
Well, yeah. And you see all the versions of yourself through videos and interviews, and you go, who's that guy? And now who's that guy? And now who's that guy? And I go, it's been so odd this last 3.5 years because it's been so isolating.
Mm.
And I've been teaching on Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. I mean, it has its own, it's not the right word, charm, but it's a place for at least to be creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to indulge in that because that is, there's this naivete about, the plagues were centuries ago. We're not going to have a plague. We can trust our politicians. We can trust life.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go, the world is askew in a way. Please tell me whether you agree that it has never been.
I mean, it is probably right now, as far as I can remember, some of the most trying times for everybody, I think. And it's been very, very difficult to deal with, after COVID and now all of the stuff that's going on in the world. I mean, everything is
it's so weird. Like in the car coming here, the driver didn't have a mask.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through this whole mishigas, this whole, drama. I was going, oh, should I move to the back seat? And I have is my mask on, right? Oh, it doesn't matter. Take the mask off. You go, what about that? And what about that? And I go, so I kept doing the AA poem. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can.
Yeah.
And the wisdom to know the difference.
Right.
And I kept saying it because there was no control. I could have done any number of things.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to do was breathe, mm-hmm. relax, find my safety,
mm-hmm.
and come and talk to you.
Nice.
And be in the moment.
Yeah.
Like we work on in class.
Yeah, for sure.
This is now.
Mm-hmm.
And now is all there is.
Mm-hmm.
And we worry about the past and we worry about the future, and you go, mm-hmm.
this is the moment right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
Right now.
Well, speaking of class, are you planning, I know you're doing Zoom, but we haven't had you in person in quite some time. Are you planning to come back in person?
I am planning, and I'm hoping in February to begin to live again and be in person and begin to travel.
Mm-hmm.
It just changed so, for all of us, so intensely.
Mm-hmm.
I was traveling to Australia. I was traveling to England, Germany, New York, LA, working on sets. It was you forget how full your life was, right?
Yes.
Until it stops.
Yeah, until it's taken away from you.
And I'm interested in asking you, do you feel that since the pandemic, you've learned more about yourself?
Definitely. I mean, right. I was by myself at home with my dog for most of the pandemic. I think it forced us to search deep down within. It forced us to, I think it forced us to be able to deal with, I mean, we were left inside by ourselves and our thoughts and our demons and also the pain on the outside. You know, when the pandemic first started, I was here the whole time, but I remember the very first couple of weeks were very strange.
Yeah.
Mostly because of the uncertainty. Nobody knew what the heck it was. Nobody had any idea what the pandemic was. Nobody knew what was going on. They started to talk about masks, but I remember that the streets were completely empty here.
Yeah.
But every 6 p.m., people would come outside of their windows and start clapping for the nurses and all the people. And I remember every night at 6 p.m., I would stand by the window and just wait to hear all of that stuff. It was kind of the only thing we had during the day, some sort of communication with people. Yeah. Even though we were all in different apartments, we got to kind of talk to each other through the windows and communicate through our appreciation of the medical staff.
So much.
Yeah. So it was interesting.
And how precious other people are.
Yes.
And you start to realize, and this is something I've come in touch with so much, it's like, what is it about? What is this moment about? Yeah, we want to be successful. Yeah, we want love. We want security. What is it? And it's something as you go towards old age, you go, it's about other people.
Mm. Is that what you took away from it?
Compassion. Mm-hmm. First for yourself. Because if you don't have that, a deep, deep understanding of who you are, where you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, if I get emotional, call the doctor.
That's okay.
generational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And when you realize all the great writers, and you know I'm such a beast when it comes to having respect for the writer.
Mm-hmm.
My parents, I think it's taken me my whole life to understand the degree of trauma that each of my parents struggled through,
mm-hmm.
my brother, me, the society, and that I'm a like a city of other people. And I suddenly go, oh, there's my mom, there's my dad, there's my bro, there's my grandma. My grandfather abandoned my mom, so I didn't know him. And you look at each person. I do this exercise, which I really recommend everybody do. I go to a Starbucks.
Okay.
And I order a coffee and I watch people walk by. And I'm telling you, you watch people just walk by and their life screams. Mm-hmm. The way their head is, the way how fast they walk, the lack of or the enormity of emotion, their backs, the way they operate in terms of other people around them,
mm-hmm.
where their focus is. And I take notes just in the idiosyncratic nature of a human being, one, walking through the world with their story.
Hmm.
And as you get old, you go, most of my story is over. And where did I come from and where did I go? So I guess what I want to say is, I think what I've come to is love. First for yourself, meaning comprehending with compassion the maturation of yourself. And I keep remembering certain things that happened to me when I was absolutely 3 years
old?
Yeah.
You can remember it?
I know. And I go, why do I remember? And unfortunately, most of it is trauma. But it also is interesting. The first memory I have, which is where all this, I'm answering your question in a very
I love it.
Elaborate way.
Yeah.
But I was 3 and I was sitting on the grass and my mom was hanging the laundry. This was in Los Angeles. And I remember I looked up and I saw the sky. It's the death of a salesman. I saw the things I loved in this world, the time to sit and smoke. And I saw the beauty of the sky. I saw the clouds. And at that moment, my mother started screaming because a bee had attacked her and stung her foot. So from the birth of the sky came this avalanche of horror and terror. And she ran into the house and she was screaming, and my mom had mental problems. So things were not just tough, they got kind of a huge response. And I remember, the next thing is I remember sitting on the couch watching her run through my house screaming and crying and screaming. And the memory of the sky and the terror of not knowing what was wrong with my mom. And in some strange way, Mershad, it's kind of been my inner life. In a way. I see the beauty, but I always feel fearful of the catastrophe.
Yeah. It's you're talking, so I always used to hear you talk about blood memory. Maybe this would be a good time to touch on that, because it has to do with where you're from, where your family is from, and how it affects your work as an actor.
Well, the Stella Adler used to talk about blood memory. I've talked about it many times. And my blood is, which I've also said in another interview, is Russian, British, and deep south. My mom was the grandma, never deep, the deep south. I've always had an affinity when I was acting, playing those those bloods, British and
Russian.
You must
have loved Streetcar.
Did you? I hope that everyone, anybody who watches this, will read Mad Pilgrimage of the Flesh.
I haven't read that.
No, no, you haven't.
I haven't.
Oh my God.
Mad Pilgrimage of the Flesh?
Wait, just wait. Just wait until you read this. By John Lahr. It is the most extraordinary biography of an artist. It's of Tennessee Williams. It took John Lahr 12 years to write it. He goes through the beginning of Tennessee Williams' life to every play and every character.
Wow.
And when you realize that when he was writing Streetcar, he left his mom and his sister to go write Streetcar Named Desire. And his mother gave Rose, which was Laura's name, a lobotomy because she wouldn't stop talking about sex.
Wow. I didn't know that. I know she got a lobotomy, but I didn't know that part of it.
When I read that, and then I saw how he wrote, you know, Glass Menagerie.
Yeah.
How each of his plays came out of his his skin, I mean, out of his roaring pain and enormous otherworldly spiritual desire to share his stories and what the South meant and what the Civil War meant and things that I've talked about. It's right from Stella Adler that the women were thought of as virgin goddesses. And that once the South fell, there was nowhere for the women to go except to madness because they were never brought up to be in the real world. So, well, I didn't know that.
Yeah, something a lot of the actresses have to know if they're going to play Blanche or Stella.
You know, this story I've told about a million, thousand, trillion times, but it's so important in Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. Maggie says to her husband, Brick, I've been so disgustingly poor all my life. I had two dresses when I married you, one my mother made from a pattern in Vogue and one from a snotty hand-me-down cousin that I hated. You can be young without money, Brick, but you can't be old, either young or with money, because to be old without money is just too awful. So I thought to myself, working with Stella, what is too awful? Because to be old without money is just too awful. And I immediately had this fantasy of Maggie being at her mother's bedside, watching her die in an institution because they didn't have enough money to go to a proper doctor. And her mother grabbing her hand and saying, don't die like this, Maggie. Don't die like this. Now, I made it up.
Right.
But I explored too awful.
Right.
If you're holding your mother's hand and you can't get her medication, that's too awful. That's not painful. That's too awful.
Right.
The specificity of Tennessee's extraordinary genius. And I saw a production of Streetcar where the actress came in. God bless her. She says, she takes her dress off and talks about how the no-neck monsters hit her lovely lace dress with a hot buttered biscuit. She had to change. And this actress took the dress off with the stain on it and threw it in the corner.
No.
And I went, play's over.
Yeah.
And I could hear the director and the actress going, well, that's her, you know, phobic reaction. She's got money now. And I go, no. Tennessee writes very clearly. She tries to scrub it off. She's going to take it to the cleaner. She's going to try to save it.
Right. The dress means a lot to her.
She says, my lovely lace dress. It's like you go, oh, my God, I had this. And people will probably smirk if they do. Go to hell. I've been working on monologues in my spare time, and I've been working on To Be or Not to Be.
Okay.
that's a good monologue.
Yeah.
But I suddenly had this epiphany where when Hamlet says to die, to sleep, no more. And by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks. I mean, just the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished to die, to sleep.
Your love for acting is back again, huh?
To sleep. No, I'm laughing at Hamlet saying, getting to perchance to dream.
Yeah.
There's the rub. Incredible. I get it. Hamlet's going, I get it. That's the respect that makes us keep not putting the knife in our goddamn chest. There's the rub, which is a sports metaphor. And I went, You hear it, but the profound discovery of that moment and lose the name of action. I don't know whether to live or die. I don't know if the ghost is real, if it's the devil. My father said, avenge my death, but should I? The dilemma, the reality. And I know it may sound naive to many people who've already figured it out, but I figured it out in my heart. Mm-hmm. To be in that much pain and that lost. And for Shakespeare to share that moment of discovery. So when I see actors play, there's the rub for in that sleep of death where dreams may come and we have shuffled off this mortal coil and must give us pause. There's the respect that makes, or there's the respect that makes calamity of somebody. Oh, shut up. He's in the moment of discovery. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to watch. Somebody very brilliant said, you want to watch interesting characters make difficult decisions in front of them. Hmm.
I remember once we were in class and two actors were working on Orpheus Descending. I'm not sure if you remember this or not, but one of the actors walked in with his guitar. He was playing... Val.
Valentine Xavier.
And
the
Heart of
Christ.
Yeah. And it's the scene where he first comes to Lady's shop breaks into the shop and she comes down with the gun and catches him. And the actor came in and put his guitar on the ground and just put it down. And you did not let him get away with that. And I remember you stopped and you said, the scene's over. You can't, because it was his... Because he describes
my
the guitar.
My life's companion,
yeah.
It cleanses me. It washes me clean.
Yeah. I never forgot that lesson.
Because specific relationships to persons, places, objects, and events.
Yeah.
And when you watch a performance that suddenly makes you go, I'm out of the reality that I'm in, and I have been catapulted into that reality. Those actors and actresses have found a connection to that writer. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken about this with many other interviews, and I go, oh, Larry, you can't talk about the same goddamn thing you've talked about your whole life. I go, yeah, I can. If you haven't read the play and read the play and read the play, because it got very, you know, kind of modern and go, yeah, I don't even read the whole play. And, you know, I just use the moment that I'm in. And I go,
yeah, good.
For a certain play or film, that might work. It might. But it's not going to work for Hamlet.
Right.
And it's not going to work for Eugene O'Neill. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to work for Stephen Adley Gurgis, mm-hmm, or John Patrick Shanley, mm-hmm, who are, you know, some of the modern great writers that we have been inspired by. And there's a whole slew from other countries, mm-hmm, and a whole slew of wonderful women writers that are seeing the world from a female point of view, mm-hmm, that we as men don't get.
Yep.
We don't. Get it.
Mm-hmm. Where
I mean, just for instance, just about bleeding, mm-hmm, that suddenly a young girl bleeds. Mm-hmm. Mommy, mommy. Oh, darling, that's, you know, and you go, we have to understand, mm-hmm, everybody deeply. When we act, mm-hmm, starting with ourselves. Mm-hmm. So that was a very long-winded way of saying, mm-hmm, my trauma that I had with my mommy and the sky became my life.
Mm-hmm. And at what point, what led you to want to act at all? Did you remember what interested you about the arts?
I wanted... to cry. And I wanted to sing. And I wanted to move. And I wanted attention. And I wanted happiness. Hmm. And all those things I thought were acting. And when I saw the great performances that I was lucky enough to see as a young man, mm-hmm. I knew. You, it's like, it shows me.
Mm.
I mean, even sitting here with you, Mashad, and I'm just like, who wants to hear me talk? But whether anybody does or not, or even I do, I was blessed by the sky, my mother, my father's incredible. My father was a burn victim. He fell into a fire when he was 7, and he had very, very bad scars all over his body, and he would never take his shirt off.
Oh, wow.
And one night he asked me to come into his room, and he took his shirt off, which he had never done. And he had a hole in his arm and all these scars. And I walked out of that room and I went, oh. He always had to have the best of everything. He always had to have a beautiful woman. He always had to make up for this tragedy. And then that was 7, and then the depression where his family lost everything.
Hmm.
My father was like, money. Money, money, money. And nothing had any other meaning. So when I wanted to become an actor, he went, oh, what, are you going to be a waiter?
Hmm.
Thanks, Dad. And I'll tell you something. This is not poor me. It's just kind of fantastic.
Yeah.
When I was thanked on the Oscars,
mm-hmm.
which was, you know, it was lovely, and I was proud of the work that the actors and actresses did, but my father called me, and he said, wow, Larry. I said, yeah, nice. He said, I never expected you to amount to anything. Thought your brother would. Funny how life works out.
He said that?
He said that.
Wow.
And I went, the sky?
And then the
mommy, I never expect you to amount to anything. Music, dance, James Dean, Lena Horne. My dad took us to the theater. My mom played the piano.
So it your dad liked theater?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. He just didn't want you to be an actor.
He had no respect for it.
But he liked going?
Say again?
But he liked going? But he didn't have any respect?
He really liked nightclubs.
Oh, okay.
And he liked musicals. He didn't like plays.
Oh, okay.
I like plays.
Yeah, yeah.
I like plays.
Yeah.
Secret. But when I was 10, 11,
mm-hmm.
I saw Frank Sinatra live.
Wow.
I saw my muse, Lena Horne,
wow.
live. The greats. I saw the greats live.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you? I think it was you who said. Were you at the Brando performance of Streetcar? Did you see that?
No.
Oh, I thought it was maybe.
You. I wish I did.
Oh, I thought somebody had. I thought, okay, was it you? I don't know why I thought.
Well,
that,
the moment when Uta Hagen was going to take over for, I think, Jessica Tandy. She was doing the road tour with Anthony Quinn of mm-hmm. Streetcar, right?
Yes.
And then suddenly Uta Hagen came, and I think, no, if I have it right, Jessica Tandy was sick. So suddenly Uta Hagen had to go on in a moment's notice with Brando in Streetcar with no rehearsal.
Oh, my God.
So that's can you
I can't even think about
brain
I know,
around
that's
as you go.
That's unbelievable.
Uta Hagen walking on to the stage to do Streetcar Named Desire with Marlon Brando with no rehearsal.
That's insane.
They just did some blocking and then they were on.
Wow. That's absolutely incredible. Did you train with Uta at all?
I used to audit her class all the time.
Oh, nice. What was that class like?
she was so meticulous with objects and the imagination. Mm-hmm. And of course, script analysis, and independence of being able to function without a good director. That, you know.
Very important.
So important.
Yeah.
And no nonsense. And you had to do the exercises. Mm-hmm. And you had to endow things. You know, it's all in her books. Mm-hmm. But when Stella Adler taught me about plays, that's when I got my stripes to even dare to be a teacher.
I was going to ask, where did your love from the theater? Because I tell everybody my love for the theater came from you. Oh. I really did not.
When I first
started training with you, I didn't really know much about. I remember I kept trying to get into your class, but I couldn't get in. And then finally I got in and I was ecstatic. Oh. I called everybody, I got it. And then immediately after, the horror set upon me about having to come to class and actually get up and work in front of you. I was like, you idiot, what did you just do to yourself? Why did you do this to yourself? I was so scared.
No, you are, but it was
tough, but it was amazing. But I remember coming to class and I remember, I think it was the last day of the workshop. So we had already, I had already gone up. And the workshops, as you know, for the actors, I don't know if you know, but it's like doing a marathon in 4 days. It really is trying. Also, we're rehearsing for like a month before we even come to class. There's so much going on. And then we come and we work with you. And then I look at I was watching some of my videos the other day of in class with you. And some of them were an hour and 50 minutes, like almost 2 hours we're up there working. And so I remember after sitting there and I think there was the last scene of the day and I looked around and everybody was exhausted. But there was one more scene. I remember you jumped out of your chair and you said, one more scene. And you were so excited. And I remember going, oh my goodness. Look at the love that he has for us and the way that you spoke about plays. And I always remember you telling us and it's been imprinted in me to always honor the playwright. Oh. It's always about the playwright. It's always about honoring the playwright. It's not about you. I had never seen the craft from that angle before. I never ever thought about it in that way. So it was very, very fascinating to me. And just your knowledge of every play was so incredible to me. I didn't know that people knew that much about the theater. And so then I remember you said, read three plays a week. So I would go home, I would buy three plays, I would read them. I would go home, I would buy three plays and I would read them just to be able to catch up, you know, because I hadn't known very much about the theater. I felt so left behind, you know, so
not
I
anymore.
Wanted to catch up.
Not anymore, Marshawn.
Yeah, I feel like I'm caught up now. But yes. it was thanks to everything that you had said in class.
Oh,
it was,
I'm so
it was,
grateful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Every play you read goes into your brain. Mm-hmm. I say to people now, because people are not reading, I go, okay, one play a week. In the end of a year, you have 50 writers in your brain.
That's true.
What do you want to put in there?
Yeah.
And when I've been working on monologues and discovering things, and, you know, I love Tartuffe.
Mm-hmm. Molière.
Molière is, you know, mm-hmm. He's good. Mm-hmm. When he's trying to have sex with the woman, she's trying to con him into, you know, getting rid of the marriage, and mm-hmm. you know, and all he wants is to get into her pants, and,
right?
And she says all this kind of seductive stuff, and he says, "Madam, no happiness is so complete as when from lips we love come words so sweet." Mm-hmm. Then nectar floods my every sense and drains in honeyed rivulets through all my veins. Mm-hmm. To please you is my joy, my only goal. Mm-hmm. This is the great part. Your love, I mean, listen to the line, your love is the restorer of my soul. Mm-hmm. It feels so sincere, and yet I must beg leave now to confess some lingering doubts as to my happiness. Mm-hmm. Might this not be a trick? Might not the catch be you wish me to break off the match with Marianne and so have feigned to love me? I shan't quite trust your fond opinions of me until the feelings you've expressed so sweetly are demonstrated somewhat more concretely. And you have shown me by certain kind concessions that I may put my faith in your professions. You go, oh my God, that I may put my dick in your vagina, my faith in your profession. You go, it's a farce. It's a dark farce, and it's so much fun, and he's so out of his mind.
Yeah.
The love of the writer, the respect for yourself, for what you can become, the symbiosis between the writer and the actor, they can't live without each other. So when people say, I don't read, I go, I don't know what to say to you. If you're a genius, you might be able to, but it's all nonsense. You work. It's what you said, Mashad. You work. You work, and then you work some more. And that's the joy. I can't even believe I just did Tartuffe, but
it was great.
But I'm trying to say I am still at 80 thrilled by great language and by the great possibility of creating a living, breathing, spiritually alive human being that you can't catch acting.
Do you think the work in the theater these days is still as good as it once was? Do you still go to theater and watch a lot of theater these days?
Well, I haven't in the last years, but I went to see Pearly Victorious with Leslie Odom Jr. the other night. Oh, my God. What a wonderful performance.
Oh, nice.
What a wonderful play by Ossie Davis. What a play ahead of its time. What a farce about racism and the undertow of it and the spirituality of it. So when I see Pearly Victorious and I see what Kenny Leon did and all of the wonderful actors and the actresses, this young woman who plays opposite him, and I didn't know her and I can't remember her name, but she plays opposite him. She's the love interest. Their physicality, their voice work, their moment-to-moment living. Just go, that's art, living art. There's living art. It exists. But those of us who still love it like you do and I do, if one person is watching this interview and they read Tartuffe or they go back and they read Mad Pilgrimage of the Flesh and they discover Tennessee Williams and they go, oh, my God, there's such beauty in life. There's the sky. That was my sky when my mommy went crazy. The sky was the theater.
Yeah. These days, I feel like we work with a lot of, there's a lot of young, actually, there is actually a lot of really, we do this thing called the Night of Scenes, where we have a theater and a bunch of actors come in, they audition with a scene.
Wow.
And then we pick 10 of the best scenes and we put them, we do a live show and they come and they do scenes from plays.
I love
it's called
that.
A Night of Scenes. It's really, it's become, a lot of people come out to audition. It's become
Where
really,
is this?
Well, we do it, we were at the Crane before, but we're at the Tank now. So we're going to be doing it at the Tank Theater. It's January 26th is the next one. I'd love to have you come and see.
Don't forget to invite me.
I will,
there.
I definitely will. But a lot of incredible young actors come, and it actually kind of restored my faith a little bit. I thought that maybe, you know, the younger actors were not maybe taking it as serious, but no, there are some really incredible, the young kids from Fordham, from Yale, Juilliard, they're all coming out.
See?
And, There are some really, really incredible actors that actually care deeply about the theater. They're doing the work. And the fact that they just want to come and just do a show.
You just want to work.
They just want to work. Yeah. It's been wonderful.
You see that in Pearly Victorious, the sheer joy of creating. And that there are these young actors and actresses who are being educated to love and respect. And because the theater will not age you, you can. There's all these parts just waiting if you're ready to do them. And to be caught up in fame and money and narcissism and a sense of look at me, which we all have. Mm-hmm. Not, but there's another joy of the spirit of what John Patrick Shanley said when you interviewed him and Stephen Adley Gurja said, there's something inside us that is the sky. Mm-hmm. And if you'd ever learned that, that John Patrick Shanley learned there was the sky and he let his blood flow to the sky in those plays. Mm-hmm. That's as close to God as I know. Mm-hmm. And hopes and dreams and joy and happiness. I mean, we're having this conversation and both of us are excited because it never stops.
Yeah, that's true.
And it never will.
Yeah. Speaking on the topic of the young actors coming up, what do you think a young actor wanting to take their craft to the next level? What do you think they should be doing on a daily basis? I know you talk about breath work a lot and vocal class and all that sort of stuff. Do you think that stuff still applies today? Do you think they should? Is there a certain few things an actor should be doing every single day to
getting still, breathing, seeing where your instrument is that day? Are there tears that need to be shed? Is there laughter? Is there anger? Is there sensuality? Is there silliness? Is there terror? Moving the feelings. Even if you only have an hour, moving the feelings and breathing and then putting on some music, different kinds of music and dancing, and then working on monologues. Mm-hmm. Finding the writers you love and working on them. Mm-hmm. Nobody can stop an actor or actress from being great except them. Mm-hmm. So I would say yes, meditation, the breathing, honing in on what the day feels like, what the day feels like, then going into movement and then going into music and then going into text. Mm-hmm. In other words, exercising, you go to the gym. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that pisses me off and also ignites me with people. I said, you'll go to the gym and work out so you look good, but what about your craft? How much time did you spend today to grow as an actor?
It's very important.
What do you think about reading that you haven't read? What great films that are waiting for you with like that, with a push of a button? Have you gone to Lincoln Center and watched some of the great performances that they've taped? How much do you want to educate yourself and grow into the artist that only you can become? Because, Mershad, I tell you this, the thing, and this has been fantastic, I go, there's one of you in the universe.
Yeah.
If you make the most of your talent, then no one can compete with you because there is no one
like you.
Or will there ever be one like you? Mm-hmm. If you don't work on it, then it got wasted. Mm-hmm. When I told you how much I love Lena Horne, mm-hmm. and I've named a theater after Lena now, and mm-hmm. the greatest performance I've said about this before, James Earl Jones mm-hmm. in The Great White Hope, mm-hmm. right? And August Wilson, three black artists who were so brilliant, who are so brilliant, that white America couldn't stop them from touching the hearts of the world. Mm-hmm. And Lena Horne didn't get on the stage with the song unless she sang it 100 times.
Wow.
And people will go, well, what about spontaneity? Yeah, sometimes things just happen. Someone will go, I didn't work on that at all. And I was just, I got the job. I go, yeah, that's your talent. But I'm talking about, where do you want to go?
I feel like spontaneity also spurs out of talent. I feel like if you're not, I feel like if you haven't been working on your craft, it's difficult to even be spontaneous. Because you have to be, I feel that way. I feel like all of the great ideas that even come to me, even in the spur of the moment, are as a result of all of the training and everything else that you've been, all of the work that you've been putting in that allows you to be, if you're not trained and you're nervous and you don't have, you're not breathing and you don't have your feet on the ground, you don't know what you want and you don't understand your character or any of that stuff, how are you going to be spontaneous and be, because you have to be spontaneous in the character.
Moment by moment by moment by moment.
Right.
My big joke, this is going to make you all laugh. This is going to really make you laugh. Albuquerque.
New Mexico?
You don't know why I said Albuquerque.
No, I don't.
No, but you didn't know I was going to say it. That's the acting. Albuquerque. I also want to find out the actress's name in Pearly Victorious. I don't want to not say her name.
Okay. We'll find in Pearly Victorious?
Yeah, the leading lady.
That's the play going on right now?
Say again?
That's the play that's happening now?
Yeah, right now. Yeah.
Can we look that, if we could look that up?
Just look that up? Yeah. Because I really want to say her name because she was extraordinary. And Leslie Odom Jr. and this actress created a kind of depth of comedy and drama that was unique. And it was, and I'd never seen her before.
Mm.
And, you know, when you discover a young talent.
Yeah, it's always good to,
you know, it's exciting. And she then is discovering Ossie Davis, you know, on Broadway. And it's like.
Who is she? What's her name? Heather Alicia Sims? Is that what it is?
What's the characters?
Missy Judson?
No. It's a long name. She has like three or four names.
Oh, the character
has
three or four.
I mean, a long name. It has three or four.
Is that her? Kara Young?
What is her name?
Luti Bell Gussie Mae Jenkins.
Yes. What's the actress's name?
Kara Young.
Yeah, Kara Young.
Kara Young.
Yes, that's who it is. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you. Kara Young is the young actress that plays opposite Leslie Odom Jr. In Pearly Victorious. It's just excellent. But the reason is because they're so alive and they love it. You can tell that they love doing this play.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they're going, yay, for the whole performance.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure we did that. And you said something else about, we're talking
the
about?
Spontaneity, maybe.
Spontaneity, Albuquerque.
Yeah, Albuquerque, yeah. I was just saying, like, it's hard to be spontaneous if you're not actually.
I have something I want to tell you.
Yeah.
I was doing a play on Broadway with Neil Simon called God's Favorite.
Okay.
And I played the son of a wonderful actor named Vincent Gardenia.
Mm-hmm.
Bless him. And my super objective in that play, I was a kind of a young 20-year-old with a twin sister, Laura Esterman, and we both had red afros. It was absurd. It was the comedy telling of the story of Job.
Okay.
And I wanted to be the best son that God ever created, and I knew that I would be there for my father 24/7. Whenever he needed me, I was there, Pop. I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in Job, God takes everything away to make Job prove that he loves God.
Mm-hmm.
So we lose all our money. We don't have any food. Our mansion falls apart. We have nothing. And he says, I want you to understand why we've lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about the fact that God is testing him because he's been named God's favorite. And every night I would listen like I was listening to the Bible to my dad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. One night, I started to cry. Just these copious tears streaming out of my face. And I have a line after he says, I'm God's favorite. And that line was, that's a great honor, Dad. Congratulations. You know, we're destitute.
Mm-hmm.
But this night, I'm crying. It's a great honor, Dad. Congratulations. And the house came down. No, I mean a laugh. I would laugh that you just dream about. And Vincent, who played my father, did a slow vaudeville take, like what an idiot my son is. He did like one of those like... And they started laughing more. They were screaming. And then he and I were looking at each other and I was crying more. And then they started applauding.
Oh my goodness.
It was outrageous on Broadway.
And it was not planned at all.
No. Show ends. Who comes backstage? Neil Simon.
Oh my God.
He had come that night and we'd been running for 3 or 4 months. And he said, who would have ever thought that that moment could stop the show?
That's hilarious.
That was unbelievable. And then he took a pause and he said, please don't ever do it again.
Why? Because he just...
Well, because it took... The audience... The play got lost.
Mm.
You talk about choices and spontaneity. You go, no, I'm there to honor my father and move on.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say... You know, breaks down in tears. It's, that's a great honor, Dad.
Yeah,
it's like a football. That's a great honor, Dad.
Yeah,
congratulations.
Well, that might actually be interesting because whenever we're in class, you always say, or usually it comes up when people are up there working. But you say, emotion is a result of active doing. Is that what it is?
Is the result of active doing.
Emotion. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about that for? Actors.
Well, look at us right now.
Yeah.
If this was a script, just the way that you asked me the question, and it's like when I'm looking at you, I see that your eyes mist over with emotion at memory.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing anything. It's in you.
Mm.
The memory is in you.
I see. So instead of trying to emote, you just have to be and let
open and open and try to meet your need. Mm-hmm. What is acting about? I've said it 1,000 times, million times. What do you need right now at this moment?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need? So I can Danny in the Deep Blue Sea. Can I have a pretzel?
Yeah.
Does he really want a pretzel or does he want to get laid? Or maybe he just really just wants a pretzel.
Yeah.
You know, no. They're mine.
Yeah.
Come on, you aren't going to eat them all. Fuck off. You know, the first 4 lines, it's like.
Yeah.
They're the two loneliest, most violent people that God ever created.
Yeah.
And they could both die.
Yeah.
Can I have a pretzel? No. They're mine. Yeah. The pretzels are mine, fucker.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. It's like.
Yeah. You also say this, a character walks into the script with a want, and I remember I circled want because you said one of the most important words for an actor to know about is want. Why is want such an important word?
I want you to answer me that.
Well, you have to know what your character wants.
It's life.
Mm-hmm. We all want something.
I want something every single moment of my life. I want to be alone. I want time to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I want to call my old friend. I want salmon for dinner. I want to forget what happened yesterday with my girlfriend.
Hmm.
I want more money. I want more success. I need. What'll happen if you don't get it?
Mm-hmm.
From the first moment of every story, but from the first moment of every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like I stayed up last night. So I said, I'm going to do this interview tomorrow. I don't want to do an interview. Who wants to? I go, it's Mershad. He's your friend. He's your student. You're lucky that anybody wants to interview you.
No.
So I went, okay. So I watched, made sure I watched the John Patrick Shanley and Stephen Ellie Gurgis. And then I saw suddenly one of my old interviews came up.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, who's that guy? And then I went, I've been watching the goddamn computer for 4 hours. That means I'm not going to go to sleep. That means I'm not getting sleep because of the lights. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I didn't. I couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. And then I kept thinking about monologues. Then I was trying to go to sleep last night. And I went, I can't sleep. I'll do monologues. I want to do. Mm-hmm. It never stops from the moment you get up, mm-hmm. the moment you're born. Mm-hmm. To the moment you die. Ilya Kazan said at the end of his beautiful book, A Life, if I could have anything, just more time. Mm. Just more time mm-hmm. to create. Mm-hmm. So life is about wanting, therefore, every play, every film is about what we want. And when people do it well, you go, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. The old thing, you've heard it many times, Mashad, the audience doesn't come to see you. They come to see themselves.
Oh, wow.
I love this play tonight, man. That was my Uncle Joe.
Yeah.
I did a beautiful play called Beast on the Moon that I directed off Broadway.
Somebody told me I should do that play.
You should.
Somebody told me you I should. It was you.
You.
It was you. It was you, actually. It was you in
Beast
Los
Angeles.
Yeah, we were in Los Angeles, and you. I read it actually. I went and got it after you had said that.
Isn't it beautiful?
It was. I read it a long time ago. Oh. I'm trying to remember. But is it about an Armenian guy? It is, right? Is it the right play? I think that was the play. Is that correct?
Yes, Beast on the Moon.
Yeah.
And after a matinee, this woman came up to me. She must have been 80, weeping. Mm. She said, thank you for showing me my father.
Oh, my goodness.
My father. Wow. Thank you. And I went, there it is. There it is. Mm-hmm. The theater, all the arts, painting, music, theater, film, architecture teaches humanity. Mm-hmm. We teach this is life. Mm-hmm. And we can laugh at it and cry at it and rage at it, and we can change. That's why God grant me the serenity. I'm not an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I could have been. Mm-hmm. My father sold whiskey my whole life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. God, I mean, you think about it, you know, you say words, God, listen to the words. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. I can't change the sky and my mother screams, or my father's burns, or my poor brother's rage. Mm-hmm. The courage to change the things I can. I can forgive them. I can find something I love to do. I can be a more generous person. And the wisdom to know the difference. Hmm. I think every single person in this whole world, if I may say, and I may, should say that poem every day, regardless of drinking or not. Mm-hmm. That's...
Yeah, another thing that I thought was fascinating that I learned with working with you was that our life experiences, our childhood, our upbringing, all of that sort of stuff, I always thought that it was all a plus as far as you can use it all for your work, which you can. But I only saw it as a positive for acting. I always thought, okay, well, all these terrible things that have happened to me, I can pull from it. And then I started to work with you really, you know, I started to take my craft seriously. And you started designing very difficult plays for me to do. And what I realized was just as easily as you can pull from it to help you there are also a lot of the pain and the trauma from when your childhood and everything that's happened to you, a lot of it will turn into limitations that you have, that you can't, that you have to work through and able to be able to play a certain character. I didn't know that until we started to work together. I was like, oh, all this bad stuff that happened to me, I thought I was like, I could use it. And then I started to realize, oh no, you can't, you have to work through the trauma.
Work through the trauma.
Because you can't, because if you don't, then you're acting on top of emotion and then it doesn't work.
That's fabulous, Mershad, right. And that's right. You know, it's so valuable what you said. Trauma is in the body. And every time I work with an actor or an actress, I've never worked with one that didn't have some aspect of trauma that either limits their emotional depth or their ability to be comic or sexual or so silly.
Many. All of those hit with me.
We all have some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is I was working with a wonderful actor and actress on Fool for Love by Sam Shepard. And the young guy did the first monologue. She slumped over the chair. Looks like she's grieving something, right? Mm-hmm. And he's working on a saddle. And and he says, May. He says, May, I don't know how many times in that first scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the actor, who's very talented, said it always the same way. May, you got to let go, May. She's hanging onto his legs. He's squeezing them. And I said, you're going to go home, both of you. And I said, you're not squeezing his legs tighter and tighter and tighter. And I said, that is the play. The squeezing of his legs in that first scene before she ever speaks is the play. He says, I'm not going to leave you. She says, how many times have you done this to me, Eddie? Brought me in and then left me like a hot rock. How many times? Yeah, but I always come back. May. He said, you bring me a different melody on every May. And you find why you got to squeeze those legs. Well,
yeah,
they came back.
Yeah.
They aced it. The whole scene.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Wonderful.
I remember one time you were working with, you remember Luciana? Luciana. And she was doing Orpheus Descending. And she was playing Lady. And she came down. And she came out with the gun, and you stopped her for a second, and she was wearing a robe. And I always remember this. You said, and it was just the slightest little thing that you did with her. And I tell this story to everybody all the time when I talk about being in class with you. You said, I want you to grab your robe and just close it ever so, just hold on, because it was open, her robe. And she was playing Lady, and her husband was upstairs, and it was cold, and a stranger had just come into her shop. And so you just told her to just ever so gently hold and close her robe like this, and just hold it like that while she was doing the scene. And it completely changed everything about how she was doing the scene.
That's her life.
Yeah, and she was just... And
that's her life.
And it was just a very, very, very small thing. I always wonder, how do you know something like that? Like, let's say an actor is playing Lady, right? And they're working on that piece.
Well, start with the name.
Yeah.
Lady.
Oh, yes. So let's explore that. So the actor should always, that's another thing I've come to learn from you, is always explore the name, because the writers are picking names for Valentine Xavier is a very-
The Heart of Christ.
Yeah. And so start with the name. What would you say, and then explore why the writer chose that name for the character?
Oh yes,
mm-hmm.
And when you look at Valentine Xavier, and it says, "I'm 30 today, lady, and I'm through with the life that I've been living."
Mm-hmm.
I have been corrupted. I have lived in corruption, but I am not corrupted. Here's why. The guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And all the autographs of the great musicians.
Mm-hmm.
He's the artist. The heart of Christ is the artist who tries to save the lady. She starts with the gun. You gonna shoot me, man? Well, if you don't get out of here, mister.
Mm-hmm.
He asks for a job because he wants to change his life.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee Williams is a gift from God. And when you read, you just wait, when you read Pilgrimage of the Mad, I mean, look at that name that John Lahr gave that book, Mad Pilgrimage of the Flesh. And there's Tennessee Williams. I mean, I don't know if I'm answering your question.
You are. I was just talking, like, when an actor is approaching a character, the first thing you said they should do is obviously explore the name. What would something else you would think they should do right after that?
Well, what they do. Not what they say.
Mm. What they do, yes.
What actions they actually take.
Mm-hmm.
They lie, they support, they cheat, they murder, they grovel,
mm-hmm.
they celebrate, they overcome. What is their trajectory? What is all the things? It's like a diagram. What is every single thing they actually do? Not what they feel,
mm-hmm.
not what they say.
Mm-hmm.
They eat lunch, write it down.
Mm-hmm.
They kiss Matilda, write it down. They punch Ethan and apologize. You look at all the things the character actually does and you see it like a map. Then you get how they speak, what is their accent, what is their rhythms, what is their tempos, how do they change? Why did they change?
Mm-hmm.
What are their physical activities? Why are they dressed the way they're dressed?
Mm-hmm.
How do they move? Could you do the play with no dialogue? And if we just watched your body, would we understand the character?
Mm.
You know, when you look at a great costume designer, you look at the meticulousness with which they give a collar
mm-hmm.
or a cuff
mm-hmm.
or something that they'll put in a pocket,
mm-hmm.
the great ones.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh, talent is your choice. Fuck, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Stella Adler, your talent is your choice. Lai, hi, it was good seeing you last night. What did you mean by that? What? I was just saying the line, hi, it was good to see you last night. Yeah, but what did you mean? What? What did you mean? I meant you wouldn't go to bed with me. That's right. Hi.
The subtext.
Good to see you last night. Do I have a chance?
Hmm.
You stole money from me.
Mm-hmm.
Hi. Yeah. Good to see you last night.
Yeah. Would you agree that script analysis is probably the most important thing for an actor? I would say so. I'm coming to... I would say that's what I've come, because you usually, when I see, usually you can tell that people have not analyzed it, because you always say the writer has given you everything that you need. You don't need to make up anything else, right? It's all there in the writing. You just have to go find it.
When you see that the Glass Menagerie is about Tennessee Williams' broken heart about his sister Rose, Laura, was the most realistic character. Tom lived at the movies.
Hmm.
Amanda lives in the Old South. Mama, I'm a cripple. Don't ever say that. Don't ever say that word. Mm-hmm. Just have a slight defect. Mm. Laura. And he leaves her to his mother to cut out her brain. Mm-hmm. If you think about that and you see the love that he had for his sister, and then you hear, oh, Laura, I tried to leave you behind, but I am more faithful than I intended to be.
Hmm. He learned something about himself he didn't know.
Blow out your candles, Laura. So, goodbye. Hmm. How do you say, blow out your candles, Laura? And so goodbye. Mm-hmm. And then years later, in an institution her whole life with a cutout brain.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that all of that research would have to be part of figuring out, I think you said, I don't know if it was you or you were quoting somebody, but you said if you don't know the socioeconomic status.
Do you know how much money you have in the bank? See how you said that? You see how you said that? Do you know how much money I have in the bank account? You went, yep.
I saw my bank account in my head, and then I said, yep, real quickly.
Now you know how to act.
Yeah, it's hard to do that, though, when it's not personal. So you have to make it as personal so that you can have a reaction that quickly.
Yeah, I mean, life, there's nothing about life that is not specific. The temperature of this plastic bottle, mm-hmm. the temperature in this room, mm-hmm. the kind gentlemen that are helping us do this. The lights, mm-hmm. the smell, nothing is general. Mm-hmm. Only actors are general. Life never is.
Yeah. It's very difficult the amount of work that has to go into it to be able to give an incredible performance, I think we very much underestimate. You totally agree with that because you're always...
Some roles are easier than others. Mm-hmm. There are parts that you have such an intuition for.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's...
You don't want to break your neck overworking. Mm-hmm. You have to know your instrument well enough to know how much work to do and how much work not to do.
Right.
That's right. Also part of being an actor or an actress and an artist is knowing how you need to prepare a certain part. Mm-hmm. That's why Daniel Day-Lewis said, I need a year, to Mr. Spielberg, to prepare Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And he found that nasal voice because mm-hmm. everybody played Lincoln with the kind of sonorous, you know. Not Daniel Day. Mm-hmm. He found the real voice. Mm-hmm.
What would you say to actors, because you hear this all the time, I don't have time. I don't have time to do that many monologues. I don't have time to prepare, read three plays a week. I got a job, I got a this, I got a that. You hear
how much time do you have?
Yeah.
Then you pick the most important thing on a daily basis, just one thing you can do, even if it's just reading over a monologue. Mm-hmm. If it's doing a sense memory, I'm going to smell the soup my mom made, mm-hmm. the potato leek soup that I came home after school every now and then when it was cold out, mm-hmm. and I smelled that garlic, butter, onion, and that was love. Mm-hmm. So you go, okay, I'm going to take 15 minutes to sense memory mom's potato leek soup.
Oh, yeah, the smell could be love because it's home and family.
That's right.
It's not a smell, it's home. Yeah.
So it's like you can do something every day and read the great acting books from your heart. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Robert Lewis, Advice to the Actor, mm-hmm. and Method or Madness. Mm-hmm. And Kazan on directing. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you, I'm not sure how we're doing for time, but I actually wanted to ask you something kind of important. I know he was important to you or is important to you, But when I was in, I grew up in Vancouver. And I was going down the wrong path in my life. I was not acting. I was, you know, a bad kid and doing all this stuff. But I had one of my best friends. His name was Duncan. Duncan was an actor. And this is when I was 19 or 20 years old. Duncan was an actor. And Duncan used to tell me stories about his teacher. And he would say to me, my acting teacher, within the first day of working with him, he looked at me and he said, what was it like growing up without a father? Didn't know anything about him. He said that to me and his heart sank because he did grow up without his father. Oof. And he knew exactly. I remember thinking to myself, that's bullshit. And I thought he was lying. You know, I was like, yeah. I was like, that's the biggest load of crap ever. He just knew that or whatever it was. But he always would tell me about this acting teacher and he would say, oh, this, he said, and I was like, oh, you know, I want to act. I didn't know anything about acting. I was running around getting in trouble all the time. He was like, yeah, but this class isn't for you. He's like, this teacher only has about 8 to 12 students. And it's a very, very serious class. And, you know, I've been working with him for a very, very long time. The reason why I bring this up is that teacher's name was Warren Robertson. And I know that Warren was your acting teacher.
Yes.
And I just always, and then Duncan was the person who gave me your book. So Duncan gave me your book when I was leaving Vancouver forever. And I was trying to start over and figure out what I wanted to do with my life. I was in my 20s and I was basically spent my whole life getting in trouble. And I basically left Vancouver to get out of trouble. But I remember I had your book when I left Vancouver.
Wow, Mershad, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I remember in the back of your book or in the front of the book, you mentioned Warren, right? You wrote something.
I thanked him.
You thanked him,
He
right?
gave me the opportunity to be a teacher.
Yeah. And I remember that's how I found your class, was the book that Duncan gave me. And Duncan's teacher was Warren, who was your teacher.
My teacher.
Yeah. And I always just thought that was fascinating. Could you talk a little bit about Warren? I know he was a wonderful teacher. And
Warren had a particular gift for getting people to open their hearts. And his exercises were not for the faint of heart. I had just come from an audition for Tartuffe, actually, and it had gone pretty well. And you would get up in his class and he'd say, what's going on with you today? And work on a monologue. And he said, why is your head forward, Larry? I said, what? He said, why are you pushing your head forward? It's something you do. I said, no, it isn't. He said, Larry, it is. You always... And he got up very gently, pushed me to the wall. I was apologizing for life, and he went. And I let out a scream you don't want to hear.
Wow.
And then I started sobbing and screaming. People said they thought that I was being murdered.
Wow.
He connected my neck and my back and my heart to the trauma of my apology for being alive. That day.
Wow.
I was never the same. Because I had been carrying that much pain.
And where was it? Where were you training with him?
I believe it was on 54th Street.
Oh, here in New York.
Here in New York.
Oh, okay.
And one day he called me into his office. He said, whenever you do a scene, you're able to verbalize quite clearly. And I think there might be a teacher in you. And he gave me 4 students.
I've never heard that story before.
Warren gave me 4 students. My first scene was Brick and Big Daddy and Cat in a Hot Tin Roof. And I sat in the chair and I started working on that scene. And I went.
And he was in class?
No, it was just 4 actors and me. And I went, I'm home.
Wow. And that's how your acting career, your teaching career started.
And the minute I started teaching, my confidence grew and I started working nonstop on Broadway. I was teaching all day and on Broadway at night. And then I went through a lot of painful stuff with my family and my marriage ended. And then I went, I'm going to stop acting for a year. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I wasn't as healthy as an actor and would never be because of certain traumas that were too deep to be in a situation where I was always asking for something and I wasn't mature then enough to go, what do you really want, Larry? And when I found teaching, it's like, I want to be of service. I don't want it to be about me. Mm. My life isn't supposed to just be about me. I have to reach out to the world, hopefully with something that has value. Mm-hmm. And Warren gave me that.
Wow. That's amazing.
It was a life-changing, true honor and miracle.
Wow. Well, we have a lot of, obviously, a lot of young actors that watch this. What advice would you give young up-and-coming actors or artists who are looking to get very serious about their craft and are looking to pursue their dreams?
Whatever book, song, painting, person, film, play, sports event filled you with enormous passion, ask yourself why. Why does that song make you cry or make you romantic and ecstatic? Mm-hmm. Why after that film do you have a hard time getting up because you're so emotional? Who are you? Why do you want to sing? What do you want to sing? What do you want to say? That's what Stella Adler said, and I've repeated it many times. If you're going to be an actor or an actress, you have to have something to say. Hmm. So I would say, love yourself first, even if you think you hate yourself, or you're guilty, or you're shamed, or you think you're the next goddess or god of the world. Find a happy medium and find out what you have inside that is unique to you, how you talk, how you walk, how you dress, what you love, what you hate, who you're angry at, what you're ashamed about, what you're proud of. And then you'll say, oh, I have to bring that to every character if I'm going to be an actor. Mm-hmm. I have to give them, I always quote Meryl Streep, God bless her, saying, I never respect a character less than my own life.
Hmm. Very interesting.
So when you say blow out your candles, Laura, mm-hmm. and so goodbye, if you understand what Tennessee Williams understood, mm-hmm. you're going to say that line.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thank you very much. That was incredible. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for the interview. And are we going to be in class soon?
Yes.
Yeah.
We are. And I want to say to you, Mashad, your eyes are so alive.
Oh, thank you.
There is such warmth and humanity and excitement. And I'm so happy you're working all the time.
Thank you.
And I'm so happy that you're doing these podcasts because having the people, except for me, that you've had on who yeah. express, mm-hmm. this helps the world.
Yeah, I think so. I really enjoy doing it. I think it's selfish for me also. I learn so much.
Yeah.
I get to come and be personal with people that I've been looking up to.
Yeah.
It's interesting to put a person in front of you whose material you've been working on for like 10 years. And then all of a sudden, boop, there they are. They're sitting right there.
I get it, man.
And you're asking them questions.
And as John Patrick Shanley said in that interview, we are all the same yeah. in some way.
Yeah.
So thank you.